Yeah, still trying to get used to this working from home. It has its advantages, but obviously also its disadvantages. But yeah, quite tired, but good nonetheless.
All
And your
right,
side?
you're working from home.
Yeah, I'm working from home. I'm actually not seeing myself in the office until next year at this point.
What?
Yeah.
Please, let's switch lives. I would love that. I would so love that.
Oh my word. It's good, don't get me wrong. It's good. You're able to be flexible with a lot of things. You're able to be flexible with your life, but you also miss the social aspect of working with people and being around people in the office, you know, and being able to just grab a cup of coffee or bounce off ideas or something like that. So, but yeah, I shouldn't complain. I get to work from home.
I feel ya, I feel ya. I was working from home the last, I would say, 3 months. Well, it feels like 3 months. And just yesterday, I'm on holiday, so
Oh,
I'm at
wow.
home. I'm at home now for the next 3 weeks, just, getting the projects kicking and
Nice.
getting time with friends. But there's a catch. So yeah, I know people and who say, hey, I need to be in the office. I need to touch someone. I need to talk to someone. I need to exchange ideas, and I do love that. So I would prefer 50-50, but
Exactly.
I envy you. I would love to be in your situation, just
That's true. That's true.
that.
But yeah, it's. I mean, it. Like I said, it has its perks, but yeah, it also has its downsides, unfortunately. But yeah, it is.
Yeah.
That's. I guess it's the what we call the new normal. So yeah, it is what it
That's
is.
true. That's true. That's true. Good. I'm so excited. I'm looking forward to this.
No, me too.
I've been looking forward to this for the last week, literally, and I wanted to be prepared for it. So I'm happy that it's happening
Sure,
today.
sure.
Today.
No, that sounds good.
Perfect.
That sounds good.
Perfect.
Yeah, it's been quite in the back of my mind as well, looking forward to it, and ever since we had the touch point, and
Yeah.
yeah, it's really nice to also have a conversation about, different topics and especially things that affect our generation, if I can put it that way. So that's always
Absolutely.
fun, and yeah, and contributing, I guess, to the zeitgeist.
Absolutely,
Yeah.
absolutely. So, you need to tell me, what do you know so far about the podcast itself,
Yeah.
about I don't know. What have you read about? What do you know so that I don't bore you with my definition of what this is about?
Actually, I'd prefer your definition because I mean, I've read about it.
Yeah.
I've gone through your page and also the looked at the grams and looked at the
Yeah.
social media. But I think the one that really resonated was really listening to some of the podcasts. So I listened to the two. And oh, I still want to actually listen to the other two that you currently have on there. And what I like is
Nice.
more the different conversation that you're trying to bring across, from different
Yeah.
angles, from different people, different backgrounds, about professionals, young professionals, and their daily lives, where they got, how or at least how they got to where they are. Shedding some light and shedding some insights into how to maybe get there for somebody else, and also just generally having a conversation and sharing ideas. I think that's what I from the gist of it, and I know I'm oversimplifying it, but that's the gist that I got from listening to
That
the
is the gist. That is the gist, man. I will not add or subtract. That is the gist. And I think the simpler it is, the more grasp it has, and
Absolutely.
different stories resonate differently with different people. And really the goal, especially for this year, is to touch more on African professionals, right? Particularly because I come from a country where people are so educated, have so many certificates, but most people are sitting at home and, thinking, what do I do next? How can I make an impact? I don't have money, I don't have networks, etc. But then I also see a different type of breed of people. I guess just people who are more risk averse, who say, you know what? I don't have money. I don't have a network, but I'm gonna work with what I have and build a career out of it or make an impact or do what I love to do and see what happens. So I'm just, you know, really trying to speak with different people and then see how they have shaped their journey as professionals.
Absolutely.
You put it quite well. I will not say anything more.
No, that sounds good.
I will not say anything.
It's actually a good thing that I can get it as well, and that means everybody else can get it, and I think that's the beauty of it. So yeah, it's really a good platform, and thank you so much for having me again. I think that's the best part right now for me.
Thank you. So I will get right into it. You know, I will start with names.
Yes.
The first one I did, I went into names because not everybody understands some names, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like your name is something that has a part of who you are or plays a part in who you are. Some people change it because it mm-hmm. just doesn't fit what they want to be, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So Vuyo, I will let you introduce yourself and your name, also because I don't want to murder your name and then I will sample and then repeat what you say, so then I will have your name right.
Don't worry. In my career so far, my name has been butchered quite a couple of times, so my full name is Nkululeko Vuyo Hlophe. So like you rightfully said, my name really plays a huge part in who I am. I actually go by my name in all my social medias because I prefer to also just portray who I am at all times and,
nice.
You know, just show myself at all times and be who I am. So Nkululeko is Zulu for, or Zulu or Swati or Nguni, which means freedom. Mm-hmm. And Vuyo is, which means joy, is Xhosa. It's also Nguni, mm-hmm. Nguni. And Hlophe is my surname, which means, funny enough, white, translated directly into English, but I'm obviously not white. But yeah, that's my name, and they really signify quite a lot, and really play a close connection to me and my family, and I guess my ancestors by extension, and because also how the names came to being. My first name came as a result of being born in 1990, and my dad felt like, hey, the dawn of freedom, Nelson Mandela's
out. Oh, wow.
So,
Nelson Mandela comes,
you
yeah.
know? So like now, okay, we're going to name him Freedom. I mean, that's what he tells me. That's the story he tells me. I don't know how true it is or not. And for Vuyo, it was really more my mom's side. They wanted to name me initially Thabo, which is more the Sotho version of Vuyo. And in the end, because my family is mixed, so as mm-hmm. you can see, I have Nguni names, mixed Nguni names. My family is quite mixed, and so they ended up mixing the names, and that's who I am. And then I guess that's how they started shaping my story.
Nice. I like that. What do you prefer to go by? Vuyo or?
Vuyo, definitely Vuyo.
Vuyo.
Vuyo is easy. Right. I explain it to the Europeans the same way I explain it to my African brothers and sisters. It's two syllables actually and four letters.
Yeah.
So, hey,
it's
easy.
Thank you for making life easy. But I would have rolled my tongue as much as I can to get it right. And I love your name.
Thank you.
All of them, actually. You spoke about freedom. You spoke about joy. You spoke about a mix of culture,
mm-hmm.
and that your name has a role in who you are as a person.
Mm-hmm.
Can you shed more light on that? In terms of, do you feel more free? Are you a joyful person, or is there something deeper to that?
Absolutely, and precisely what you just said. My name's, I can safely say that my parents kind of, you know, set my destiny in that course by naming me with those two names. I'm a very free person. I love my freedom. I like taking risks. I like being out there, which pretty mm-hmm. much shows exactly where I am in my career and in my life.
Yeah.
I really love laughing. I laugh a lot. I smile all the time. I really like bringing joy and being surrounded by joyful people, and I would like to hope that I'm also contributing towards that joy. And yeah, so those two words really, really mean a lot to me. And Hlophe, it really just signifies my family and the connection that I have with them. So yeah, I carry those all the time. So I name it, I make it a mission to actually write it and fully in my emails. That's how bad it is.
NVH. Like,
you must know. You must know.
I like that. I like that. And there's no shame in
absolutely.
Owning that. I absolutely love that. What you say is also so powerful in the sense of you make it known to the world. Mm-hmm. And you spoke about being a risk taker. Yep. And I also saw that when I was going through your profile. Mm-hmm. You know, seeing your journey from South Africa to Germany now. Mm-hmm. But I won't dive into that yet. I want to know, because everyone's like big theme is dealing with post-corona.
Oh my word. You know? Yeah.
And you speak about joy. So I want to know, how are you building your balance as a professional right now, being at home and still having to deliver, I believe, you know, just going through that post-corona, or some people are still actually in the corona crisis.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for the most part, I think the world is still very much entrenched in the corona times. I think when you're working, like probably yourself, you see it a lot more. When you're working for a multinational, you're working with, you know, people from different spheres of life and also in different time zones. And the impact is different there versus here. The impact is different from home in South Africa versus Europe right now. So I'm having those conversations. Oh, yeah. So it's really, you know, trying to balance that that equation out. To be honest, I don't think I have a full answer as to whether or not I'm balanced and coping with during Corona and post Corona. But
okay, fair enough. Yeah.
But I'd safely say that the only thing that's kept me constant is, or that's kept me grounded is just being in contact with friends and family. And in fact, this past weekend, I took a trip to see one of my best friends and one of my closest friends. We haven't seen each other since the crisis. And nice. Yeah, so it's those things, those small acts, and, you know, every now and again, touching base with family, you know, catching up here and there if social distancing allows, so a drink or two within Munich. And yeah, that keeps me sane.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. So a knit circle. I hope your family's doing well.
They're trying. Yeah. Yes, as South Africa is a mess right now, unfortunately. It's now, I think, from today, the top five or something like that in terms of cases in the world. So it's really struggling. And obviously, by extension, the rest of Africa. So where we come from, it's really a struggle right now. All the third world countries are catching the brunt of this pandemic. But we hope we'll pull through. Yeah. That's all we can hope for right now.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And like you say, you know, the close-knit circle keeps everything kind of balanced, even though you have the storm, you know, taking place. Talking about storms and risks, et cetera, I saw that your journey started in South Africa.
Correct.
And I meet a lot of people who want to have that international experience, who want to experience the world, etc. How was your journey? You know, can you walk us through your educational background, just bit by bit, step by step?
Sure. No problem. I mean, my story is, I guess, depending on which angle you're looking at it, can be deemed a little bit interesting. I started working and also studying part-time immediately when I left high school. So I've graduated high school, I think, when I was 2017 now. Sorry, 2007? Oh my God, I'm losing track of
time. Oh my gosh, I was like, wow, I'd be super young. That's
that's like genius levels. That's like genius levels, I tell you. I finished high school 2007, and then when I was 17 years old, that's what I wanted to say, and started immediately to study and work the next year. Unfortunately, my parents could not really afford tertiary education like that. So I really had to start working. So the first year was quite tough. At that time, I didn't have any learnership, any scholarship or anything like that. So I went into first year pretty much with my mom and my family trying to bootstrap my education for that year. And luckily, at the end of that year, I ended up getting a learnership with the company that currently employs me and the company that obviously brought me where I am so far. That got me into
What is a learnership? What is a learnership? So, I've never heard that term before.
So it's actually a cross between, we called it a learnership at that time, but it's actually a cross between working full-time, and then they pay for your studies part-time, and you also do both. And you have to fulfill both in order for you to essentially get a permanent position within the organization. So we did that for 2 years, me and a couple of friends actually, we did that for 2 years, and we were studying towards a bachelor's in accounting science. So the so-called CA stream, so everybody that knows from back home, one of the most interesting, toughest journeys, that any professional can take, but stream, absolutely. And that's how my career started, and I continued then to work within the organization and progress quite well, I must say, within the organization through trust, through speaking up for myself, and really making sure that everybody knows what I want, and also delivering on what they want or what they see, and also following my passions at the same time. And then ended up to master's level, I guess, for the same qualification, and all part-time, so all during my now 11 years of working.
That's amazing. I mean at 17 I was not thinking of working at all, and then I that's a level of maturity that one also needs to have, because you mentioned being able to speak up and express what you want. What were the things that you wanted at 17 that you expressed through that leadership partnership, right?
Absolutely. Good question. So for me, it was an interesting time, because at that time, because my parents couldn't really afford it, and I had to really grow up fast and get myself into a position where I can really start fending for myself. And as soon as I got the learnership, I left home. So essentially I've been out of home around about the same time that I started studying and working. So I've really been on my own, along with my friends and my friendly circle, which is now my family ultimately. And during that time, I guess one of the things, or one of the few things that I told myself, was I needed to make a difference for my family, and also make a difference for myself, and also try to, I guess, contribute as much as I can to that, situation that we had at that time. So that kind of drove me to really push and, to always speak up at work, to always fight for what I needed, and always to, put myself in conversations, build relationships. And I wasn't as talkative as I am right now, so that kind of
I also, don't believe you.
I swear to you, I wasn't as talkative as I am right now, so that came gradually, and partly I think because of the learnership, because it was grueling, it was tough. You really now forced, as a 18 year old, you're forced to work with people that have, 10, 15 years careers. And, you need to now fend yourself and fend for yourself and find yourself in difficult situations, and actually now trying either sink or swim, and trying to build a career. But luckily, luck was on my side, and I worked also just as hard as I could and build relationships, and it worked in the end.
That's amazing, and I'm so happy I'm meeting somebody from Southern Africa who has gone this route. I've met people in Austria, where I just recently moved, who do what they call in German a Lehrlinger program, which is basically you work and you study.
Werkstudent, I think in Germany.
Exactly. And I found that really powerful because now I understood why companies ask you for experience beforehand. And then here I was, you know, fresh of college. I'm like, who has experience fresh out of college? And then I meet these people and they literally know how to navigate themselves in an engineering context, right? Because I'm an engineer by studies.
Yeah.
And fresh out of college, if you ask me to build anything or, I don't know, go on a production line and fix issues, I'll be like, are you kidding me? Like, what textbook tells me how to do that?
Yeah.
None. You need to be in that practical, pragmatic approach.
Absolutely.
type of platform. And in that Lehrlinge Fachstudium, learning, what did you call it? Learning.
It's a Werkstudent for us. I think that's what it's called in Germany, when you just do your work and you work part time and finish your studies, etc.
Right. I found that powerful. That's great, because you have really experienced, mature people. Now I know why. Like, you see all these job descriptions, you're like, 5 years experience.
Yeah.
A recent graduate, I'm like, okay.
Absolutely. I wish actually we had it more, or it was more prominent in South Africa, or even the rest of Africa for that matter. Because for me, it really accelerated my career, and it accelerated my, I guess, my start in the working world, and also accelerated my maturity level to a certain extent. I wish it was done a lot more.
Absolutely.
I really do.
Absolutely. What was one of the things that you learned in your first years of this experience?
Wow. So
it's a long time ago. I know. Now you gotta dig. you gotta dig.
I mean we did a lot of rotations. So the rotations really entailed, so I work for an engineering conglomerate, so we had a lot of business units, we have a lot of business areas. So I managed to rotate within the industry side and the energy management side. At that time we used to call it the power generation side as well. And then mixed that with a little bit of health and ears, or the healthcare business, and then I mixed that also with the corporate stint. Which is ultimately what I ended up doing. I think one of the biggest things that I learned was try and, you know, learn as much as you can from each of the different topics, or from each of the different areas, and see how you can bundle that together to build your own expertise. So you needed to really grapple and take from pieces here, pieces there, pieces here, and make yourself then the person that you are, that you ultimately want to be within your career. And I think that's what helped me in a nutshell, because I got to work with different people from different backgrounds. I got to work from somebody from industry who has a different engineering background or different finance background versus somebody in energy management, and somebody with a doctor, like a typical doctor in Siemens Health and Years or Siemens Healthcare, versus somebody who is building power plants somewhere in the rural areas. You know, so it was a mix of different experiences that ultimately helped, I guess, hone and also try and package those skills to who I am ultimately. I think that's the biggest learning.
That's powerful, this learning experience. And I wish more companies hired for that, for your learning capability versus your skill sets to today. But talking about that learning journey, right? Because you are now in a completely different continent, and you have studied accounting science. I have so many questions all in one. First, your profile, right? Accounting science, and you speak of energy being in this industrial setup. When you started at 17, because that's a very young age to know what you want. How did you choose accounting science, and why the finance arena? Please correct me if I'm wrong, because I have idea what accounting science is, because the science is confusing me.
It makes sense. It's really confusing. But I guess maybe going backwards, starting from the beginning, I didn't really know what I wanted at the age of 17. I think rightfully so. I don't think anybody at that age would actually know exactly what their life will be, what they want to study. You know, you're still trying to figure things out. And to be honest, that can take anything between 17 and 50 for that matter.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I think from my side, I wanted something that gave me a little bit more options. I've always been fascinated by business and the world in general, the mm-hmm. finance world in general. So that's the one constant that was always there. But in high school, I actually did science. I did math. I did obviously finance and accounting. I gave myself a little bit more options in that sense when I left high school. But when mm-hmm. I went into the working world, I wanted something that was more, I guess, broader and encapsulating a lot of things. At the end of the day, whatever you do, whether it's in engineering, whether it's in startup as a small business, it ends up in your finances, right? It ends mm-hmm. up being reflected somehow in your books and records. So if there was anything that would give me that that ability to tap into any industry I would want, it's the finance world. At least that's how I saw it. And that's mm-hmm. ultimately what ended up being my choice, and that's why I chose accounting science. And what accounting science actually entails, at least in terms of the school itself, I think every university packages it differently. You do audits, you're auditing finance, accounting itself, the traditional accounting, and you do tax. So it's really the combination of all the fields that you can think of. And and that's ultimately how I ended up doing that field.
Nice. And then you started your program in South Africa,
right?
And then now you are in a completely different world.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get there, and then why where you are today? Because I kind of now was getting the link with oh no, I'm gonna like have a, what do you call it, when you spill something before people know, because I don't think people know you work for Siemens, and I do. Now I just let everyone know.
No, it's all good.
I just spilled the beans. Oh my goodness. But I was kind of getting the connection, right? Because I was looking up your arena, and I saw mm-hmm. a lot to do with energy,
absolutely.
To do with the industry itself, and a bit of, I didn't see a little health, but I kind of see how that journey, mm-hmm. you know, kind of built up. But I want to know how you got to where you are, and how you made some decisions to get to where I am. Yeah.
I think that really boils down to the relationships that I made during the course of the years, and also learning from different people, and also taking in pieces of information from different people. But I guess the question maybe is to why did I ultimately leave South Africa? I think that's what you...
Yeah. Why did you leave? Because I don't know if you want to go back. I don't know if it's just a transition or you're like...
Exactly. That's a question that I'm grappling with. That's a question that I think everyone who's an expat from Africa is grappling with every now and again. But I left because I've always wanted to have international experience. I wanted to be in a company that actually allows me to have some form of international experience. So as soon as I joined the company and I joined the organization and I understood exactly the footprint, the global footprint that it had, I said, okay, I want a piece of that. I want to be able to say I have worked and lived and traveled such and such countries because of also what I do. And that's essentially what drove me. And ever since I finished my traineeship or my learnership within the organization, I was always working towards that. And so luckily I was able to, because of the work and also just, you know, the different roles that I've had over the years and working internationally within the different projects that I've been working on, I built enough profile or built enough of a profile that it was recognized within HQ. And then I decided to join, this global controlling and finance assurance program that we currently have, which is bringing pretty much 200 plus people from all walks of life within which Siemens actually occupies, or within Siemens that has a footprint in. And this is like I like to call it a brain trust, but it's really smart people that are in there who are trying to solve a lot of problems, a lot of issues that we may or may not have. And so we are pretty much forming a safeguard internally within the organization before we go, before we defend ourselves towards the external, if I can put it that way. So yeah, it's nice. That's how it ended up being. I would say it's really something that I've been working towards, and also it came from the drive that I always wanted to live abroad, and always wanted to travel. That's always been my constants. Always wanted to live abroad. Always wanted to travel, and yeah, luckily I'm in a job that does both.
Nice. And then you mentioned the whole concept of that it's bringing talents that have to solve problems.
Yeah.
A lot of people, I mean, these are programs where you don't have a big percentage of the population getting into.
Yeah.
And what I see from you is fine. You had the vision, you had the drive.
Mm-hmm.
What is your tip to somebody who's also aiming high, wants to have that international experience? What are two things you tell that person to do in order to reach that mark? Because I mean, one can have a vision, but it's not all the time
that
is met by the expectation or that it happens in reality. So help people out.
I mean, it's every journey is different. Every journey is, you know, is unique in to a certain extent. But trust the process. I think that's the first thing that I'd say to anybody. Trust the process and work. Don't be afraid to work. Don't be afraid to take chances. Don't be afraid to reinvent yourself, because that's also very important.
Oh.
Don't be afraid to reinvent yourself. Just because you've started now in a career and now you're realizing that, oh, hey, I have now a different interest. Say I started as a finance person and I was in the accounting department and now I'm a performance controller or commercial project manager, and I work with power plants instead of books and records, and I'm running, you know, don't be afraid to reinvent yourself during your career. I think that for me was the biggest, ultimately the one thing that differentiated me from other people, is that I was a typical finance person, and then I transformed myself to be more of a project manager to a certain extent, and also now linking different key skills that I've taken over the years, and also being able to learn new skills during the process. So I'd say trust the process and don't be afraid to reinvent yourself. I think those are the two things.
That's powerful. That's powerful. Like, and I'm happy that you mentioned that, reinventing yourself, learning new stuff, but getting outside your comfort
Absolutely.
Zone, your idea of this is what the future holds for me, especially now, like post-corona, and not even post-corona, just the way technology is so quick.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many jobs that are at risk, and I feel a lot of people it is normal to feel threatened that a certain job might become extinct, but that's an opportunity to reinvent oneself.
Exactly. Because,
and that's what I think the world needs more of. That's powerful. Thank you. I was not expecting that, but that's a very powerful message.
I hope it helps. I really hope it helps whoever's listening.
It is. It's a powerful message. Talking about reinventing yourself and then being in Germany, a German-speaking country, I do understand that a headquarter will probably speak English, but how has language been something that you've had to navigate through, particularly being in Germany, which is what a lot of people are afraid of, you know, not venturing out to countries where they feel they'll really need to be extremely outside their comfort.
Yeah.
Because you have the language, you have the culture.
Yeah.
How has it been for you?
Wow. That is, I would say the fun part as well as the most intense part right now.
Oh my gosh. Fun.
Oh my word.
It's
fun in the sense that learning a new language, I think that's in general, that's fun. Anybody who likes, you know, picking up new things and picking up new skills as they go along, learning a new language, you know, is exciting.
Yeah.
But German is also one of the most hardest languages to ever learn. I'm sorry to say. It's really tough, you know, and so I'm still, I can safely say I've been here for now 2 years, 2 months actually, since I moved from South Africa. So it's more of a challenge, day to day. I think it, within the work environment, it's fine because my work, you know, mostly entails working in English, and also we're an international company, so English is still the medium of instruction. But German is important for your social life and also for just your day to day. And you need at least the basics, I can safely say that, which I've managed to pick up a little bit here and there. But it takes constant work, unfortunately. And simply because I don't get it at work, it means I'm not forced to do it. But now when I get into the social aspect, I'm like, okay, hey, I need to actually know a little bit of German to be able to get through this, or to be able to order something, or to be able to talk to this person at the gym, or whatever the case may be. So you need those aspects. But I think also Germans, the one thing that I've learned is that most of them know English very well. So if you show a little bit of, you know, willingness to learn their language, I find them very welcoming afterwards, because they're like, oh, hey, you're actually trying, and now you can actually conversate in English and or a mixture of the two, and it helps with you know, acclimatizing and also, you know, being part of the community a little bit more. But it's tough, don't get me wrong, it's tough.
It is.
I'm sure you can say the same, actually.
It is tough. And beyond the language is, for cultural me, I would say the toughest is the cultural difference, where I have learned not to reinvent myself, but to be at peace with bringing myself to the business, because I'm also working in a very Swiss environment, and the Swiss are very calm people. And what has been appreciated is bringing in a bit of non-calmness, like just bringing in
your energy.
who I am as a person, what I'm used to, where people, for me, there's a thin line between private and business life, because I'm the same person. If I walk out of the door, I don't just throw myself out, you know, I walk out the same person I was, and I come in the same person I am. So I don't do that, you know, strict separation of personal and business life, and then that works for me. It might not work for everyone, but it works.
No, absolutely. That's actually a good point. Very, very good point, because I tend to do the same, to do exactly the same. The same talkative person at work, even if I annoy them as much as I can, and I'm the same talkative person after work. So it's they really get one to one exactly the same person all the time. Yeah. That's a good point, actually. Culturally, that helps.
One to one. And what are some of the things that after two months, that you appreciate in the context of an international experience, right? Because you said you had that in your books to get international experience, and then now you are walking in that international experience. How is it? How does it feel to be in that arena? Yeah,
it really. I mean, I know it sounds cliche, but it really gives you a global perspective. Sorry, it's like it really does. It gives you a bird's eye view, and I'm now looking back at home. It gives you a bird's eye view that you wouldn't ordinarily have back home. And that's probably one of the reasons actually why I left was that I felt like I was hitting a ceiling, you know, even though it's an imaginary ceiling, I felt like I was hitting a ceiling in South Africa and back home. And I was like, okay, I need something that's beyond, not just in terms of the job, but just beyond that aspect. So it gives you that bird's eye view that you need. And sometimes it also helps you solve problems back home a lot better. And the reason why I say that is because you're now getting an experience that you wouldn't ordinarily get back home. And you can now plow that back in whatever shape or form back home, if possible. And also you can see the contrast between, okay, what we do, how we do things in South Africa versus how they do things here, and what works best, what doesn't work best. It really gives you a different perspective. And I think that also comes with just not just living abroad, but just traveling in general, seeing the different aspects, seeing how different people tick, and also just being part of a global community that helps you broaden your, I guess, problem solving skills, if I can put it that way, in a more global context.
True,
Yep.
True. Absolutely. Absolutely. And going to that, for example, when I think of home, I don't want to compare Zimbabwe and South Africa. I will get killed. I don't want anyone to come to my house and kill me.
No, come on.
I will not do that. But there are some things
we have a lot of similarities, actually. So.
I think so.
I'll be the first to admit that.
I really do. And when I think of the landscape right now, particularly in the shaky ground right now, when it comes to the financial ecosystem, the investment arena, a lot of people I talk to from an international context, especially those in banks, or not even banks, but in the fintech industry, are a little bit cautious to speak of Africa, or even if we narrow it down, South Africa, Southern Africa, maybe South Africa, not so much because there are investment opportunities that are well known to international investors. But when it comes to the Southern African landscape, the ecosystem becomes a little bit blurred and too risky for a lot of international folks.
Absolutely.
And I just wanted to know from somebody who is in the field and navigating in that space.
Yeah.
What is your thought of our current status quo in terms of the whole financial sector for Southern Africa?
I think we have, if you think about the rest of the world, and also comparing to Southern Africa or Africa in general, we have the biggest growth potential. I know everybody says this, but it is true. So Southern Africa within the finance space also has a huge growth potential, similar to how we see it in energy as well. There's a huge market potential there. And within finance, the problem is not that, the business is not there, the ideas are not there, the people are not there. It's more that access to finance is really an issue, particularly when it comes to SMEs. And like you rightfully said, the international arena doesn't necessarily see us as, appetizing in terms of being an investment hub. So I would say, it's a bit of a tough one. And I think if we can try and improve the access to finance for a lot of these startups, a lot of SMEs, which is pretty much also what I care about and what I do as my 5 to 9, as I would call it. It's really bringing those people together and bringing those connections together to say, okay, hey guys, here's some financial, or here's some, great tech ideas that are coming out of this area, and this is something that might be worth funding, or this is something might worth partnering with, or this is something that you might find useful in your day-to-day world, essentially. It's
absolutely,
for me, I feel like it's a growth potential. Like, it really is. It's cliche, but it really, really is. There's a lot of untapped potential there.
It really is.
Yeah.
It really is. And where I struggle is that it is a growth potential. However, you still have that cautiousness when it comes to, digging in the pockets to invest in something. I would like to know, what has been the response, or what is the engagement? Because you mentioned you're also navigating in that sphere, right?
Absolutely.
If you see an interesting SME, you push it forward as a potential investment and so forth. What has been the engagement on that? How is it working?
So right now, I'd say the appetite of the world is obviously really a little bit more risk averse. I can safely say, it's really tough to convince somebody to invest in South Africa or to invest in any other African country when you see also the government landscape being the way it is. So it's because everybody links, the business to the environment that it's in. So in this instance, they look at, or they assess that particular entity next to the corruption of South Africa, as an example. So trying to convince now somebody within Europe and say, hey, this is actually a good potential, this is something that can actually work. And they'll ask you that, okay, but how does that work now within the whole landscape of, the government issues, the crime issues? So it's always mixed with the social aspects, and that's always now trying to separate the two and trying to bring up across a message regarding that particular SME and that particular solving or problem solving aspect or idea, rather than, you know, being lumped up in all the different issues that SA has or that the rest of Southern Africa has. I think that's the toughest part to navigate, you know, trying to separate those two.
Absolutely. I fully believe you. How are you as an expat investing back home?
Good question. So we have at least for me, one of the biggest things that I wanted to do when I got here is to really try and plow back as much as I can. So I try, as at least even before I left, so I've been involved with quite a lot of startups, some failed, some really succeeded, and some are, you know, in the early stages. So I've always tried to involve myself and align myself towards them. And the first thing that I really strive towards doing is providing research and providing really analysis on different topics related to that particular SME, mainly focusing within the finance sector or the fintech, as you would say, and also the energy sector, which is where I have a little bit more expertise in. So I'm able to advise SMEs in terms of navigating those arenas and navigating those markets. And recently also got into the creative space a lot more, because ultimately everybody needs to be a creative. Not everybody's the same. You know, I think without a world of creatives, I think the world would be boring. So I love working with creatives. I think they bring out a different side of me, other than the bookworm or other than the finance person. So I really now love working with creatives, and it's tough, it's different. But yeah, that's how I'm trying to plow back. And also we have different ways in terms of practicality. We have it's really the stock fail. You know a stock fail, right? It's really the stock fail idea, just amplified within the global community. So we have people within the global community of expats. Right. We are now contributing and investing in businesses within the area, within South Africa and Southern Africa. So really getting the access to finance, trying to gather that as much as we can, and, you know, try and bring that idea into fruition.
That's beautiful. Yeah. That's beautiful. And you mentioned that there are some like startups or SMEs that have failed. I would like to know why did they fail? I would like, and I'm not going to bet my life that it had nothing to do with corruption.
No, it had absolutely nothing to do with the socioeconomic issues of South Africa. It really was. I mean, in this particular one, it's one that me and my friend and my partner, we put in a lot of energy, but it simply did not work. And it simply wasn't solving the problem. And also, we didn't understand enough of the industry. In this instance, it was the creative industry. And I don't have the background. My friend doesn't have the background. And our partner, who we were backing at the time, has been a creative all his life. But we were relying on him to really ride and to do everything and to run it as best as he saw fit, instead of actually imposing also our way of doing things and also being able to provide some form of guidance to them, you know, to navigate things in a different way, that ultimately led to the failure and also the fact that we left. Unfortunately, we had to leave the country, and he was left alone, one of our partners, and that ended up being a tougher issue, because that's not a business that you can run remotely. Unfortunately, you need to be hands on. You need it to be hands on, and it died an unfortunate death. But hopefully, it will get revived. He's working on different topics, so he's a visual creative, he's a visual artist, and he's now working on a different aspect. And now we're trying to bring it up in a different way. And more towards the global arena, and rather than the local one.
That's lovely. I like that we speak about this, because it also crushes the assumption that reports that describe. I do understand that the socioeconomic status of a country is important, or the political status is important, but more so understanding the ecosystem or understanding the team structure, like you said, addressing the problem. And I feel more and more investors who are hopefully more gonna tackle that, you know, growth industry will be attuned to that and are listening to that. How do people find you if they need your support? Because you spoke about providing research, mm-hmm. Analytical support to SMEs and, mm-hmm. and startups. How can people find you if they say, hey, I need some help in that arena? And what can they expect from that?
So, I mean, to get in touch with me is pretty simple. We are shopping all social media, okay. anywhere is it's exactly the same name. But you can always just tune into or check out vestedinterest.com. Vested, that is V-E-S-T-D, okay. interest.com. And we pretty much now we're trying to package it in a different way, trying to make sure that we bring across all the different resources and making it available. Beforehand, we had it backed up and also working with different entities that are smaller. Mm-hmm. So we had it really smaller in a small scale, and now we're trying to bring it across to the general population. So you can always reach the content and also the information via the website. And within nice. There, you'll find obviously the different content from the VC or the private equity world. We're trying to, at least the aim of Vested Interest, let me put it this way, is to demystify the private equity and venture capital market within Southern Africa with a strong, I guess, an open culture of you know, embracing socially responsible technology. And that's essentially what we're trying to advocate for. And for me, that's my passion. That's also what I did my thesis in terms of school. So it's really an extension of something that I love doing. I love the private equity industry. I love finance. I love SMEs, and I want to make it, a better place for them within the Southern Africa.
Nice. I like that. You are in an exciting place, particularly when I look at the Southern African landscape.
It's exciting. Absolutely.
And also what you're doing with Siemens. That's absolutely exciting. Siemens is like the icon of energy when you think of that. So you are in the right place for, you know, everything that you would like to impact.
I'd like to think so. I mean, energy, ultimately energy is the biggest thing, right? We will need more energy going forward. We are now, I guess, becoming more connected workers. I think that's the new term, particularly with Corona and the situation that we're currently in. So tech, not just in the finance world, tech will become even more of a thing going forward. And that means energy, and that requires energy, clean energy. Let me put it that way.
Oh yeah.
It requires clean energy.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Sustainable energy.
Tell me about that. I was so shocked because I mean, as a user, you know, people use the internet, people do stuff on the web, and a simple thing like, you know, I was wondering what happened to eBay. And then I discovered eBay is now a data company. It doesn't consider itself an e-commerce company anymore.
Correct.
And one of the guys was explaining that the huge part of the business actually goes into ensuring that they have enough technology in order to sustain the whole usage of the sites, which goes into the home cooling of the data service that they have, and that's their business. That's basically their big 80% chunk of the business model.
Absolutely.
Of eBay. And I was like, what? That's,
things have changed.
It's shocking. Yeah, that is,
things have changed. I mean, big, let's be honest, big data, it's also another cliche, sorry to say, but
it is
big data is the business of the future nowadays. Any company that has data has a gold mine, because that company is able to either utilize the data in an ethical way, hopefully, and, you know, tap into different markets and also understand people a lot better. So data mining and being able to analyze data and also to be able to, you know, position it in a strategic way and help, as an example, SMEs goes a long way nowadays. And that's the business of the future. That's the model of the future. So most companies have to do it. Look at Amazon. Look at Facebook.
That's the model of the future.
Yeah.
So to wrap up, I would really love to know a perspective of a Black man navigating in the professional arena, particularly in Europe. Mm-hmm. You know, I was saying I never get the opportunity to speak to other peers, particularly Black men. It's not something that is often discussed. You hear the idea of Black, it's hard to be a Black woman in the corporate, but there are also Black men in the corporates who are striving the same way as Black women are doing. And I just saw on your profile that you were also at the Black Lives Matter in, I believe, Munich. Don't know, but they were some posts, and that was remarkable. And I wanted to know how I cannot miss that topic, because it's something that was huge the last weeks, and the actions are even more so important. And then, so I just wanted to know, what is your experience as I know that that's too much to package in a few minutes, but given I see your journey, and it's a journey of vision, of hard work as well, of maturity, and throughout the discussion, race never came up, you know, none of that. And then I just wanted to know, to what extent has race played a role in your career, and how do you use that, or how, you know, just what is your tip to other Black men out there who struggle with that aspect in their career to grow?
Absolutely. It's a tough one. It's really, like you said, it's really tough to unpack in a few it moments, is. But I can safely say that for me, I've had you know, tough instances and tough, unquestionable moments through when navigating through Europe. I think that's pretty much any Black experience out there, not just regardless of whether it's male or female. It's always tough, you know. Sometimes it's really lack of understanding from people, and to a certain extent, even some racism that comes in. Luckily, it hasn't translated into the work, simply because I have probably maybe been lucky by being surrounded by people that are open-minded, and also people that are willing to learn, and people that are willing to hear me out, and people that are willing to also hear and understand my experience, and my perspective is different from theirs. So I've been lucky in that sense. But if there's one thing that I can tell people who are now trying to get into either any corporation for that matter, or trying to work internationally, be open to their culture, or be open to the culture of the land or the culture of the company, but at the same time, don't be afraid to bring yourself into it. Don't be shy to be the Black person, and don't be shy to be yourself. Don't be shy to portray yourself at all times, and don't be shy to bring out your values, because at the end, nobody will ever say, okay, you know, that person did this, or that person didn't do that because of their race, if they can see that you are really who you are at all times. Because it, unfortunately, racism doesn't do well with contact, you know. So as soon as people see your character and people see who you are, and you know, hopefully, I mean, I know there's some instances where that doesn't really happen, actually, quite a lot of instances. hopefully that can bring you closer to whatever you want to do, and wherever you want to be within the career sphere. It's a tough one. It really is. It's different for everyone. But for me, being myself and always speaking up, you know, standing up for myself, sticking to the work helped. And also voicing out my opinion. Like you said, I go to, you know, Black Lives Matter movements. I voice out my opinion. I make it clear. I speak out within equity culture and diversity and inclusion within the organization. I speak out because I want everybody to know that this is who I am. This is what I stand for. What's right is right. What's wrong is wrong. And at the same time, do your work. That's it.
Do your work. Yeah. Be yourself. Do your yourself. Work. Show up. Speak
Show
up.
Show up. Exactly. Yeah. It's simple. Yeah. It sounds simple, but it is what it is.
It is. And unfortunately, because of the time, I know it's a topic that can be discussed
We can unpack it for right more. Yeah, exactly. We can unpack it for. I have these conversations quite often. So, yes.
Absolutely. No, thank you for your words. Thank you. I always do a round of like my last jackpot question, which is quite interesting because I've had like different answers to the same question. which goes on, I have this like concept of an integration model, right? Where I ask people, what do you like the most? Do you like fruits?
Mm-hmm.
So just fruits that are cut into pieces and placed on a plate, finito. Or you prefer a fruit salad, which is a mixing of the fruits, and you just have this, I don't know, different flavor depending on the fruits you have, but you still have the taste of the fruits. Or a smoothie, which is a complete, I don't know what will come out depending on the fruits you have, right? You have a completely different thing depending on the combination of ingredients you put there. So what is your preferred integration model? Fruits cut simply assorted on a plate, fruit salad, or a smoothie?
Wow. If given the choice of those three, I would have to go with a fruit salad, because it's a mixture, right? It's a combination, right. So it still allows the green to be green, the red to be red, and at the same time bringing everything together with a nice, you know, olive oil and some, you know, so it's yeah, I'd say a fruit salad, and you know, so whatever you mix it with, you know, yogurt, whatever. So
yeah,
it's that mix allows you to, you know, to make things a little bit more interesting. So I'd say fruit salad. That's an interesting way of doing it. I'd say fruit salad and veggie salad.
And veggie salad, yeah. My gosh, you healthy person. Yeah. That is so
one of those. It has to be a mix. It has to be a mix.
okay. So yeah. mixed salad.
Can I ask where? How did you come up with that question? Wow, that's a nice way of framing it.
I don't know. I just found it interesting. You know, we had. I always date back to my, what do they call it, at university, like the first week, orientation week,
mm-hmm.
where the university I went to had about 100 different nations represented, even now more.
Mm-hmm.
So in the orientation week, they kind of tried to make you understand that your culture is not superior or inferior. You are a group of people.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of allowed, not even kind of, they allowed you to experience, as any university would, how you wanted to be, which means you had the chance to pool with people from your own.
Mm-hmm.
Continent. In this case, there weren't so many Africans, so you would just pool with other Africans, or you would venture out, you know, to other cultures, make mm-hmm. friends, etc.
Yeah.
But maintain yourself, or you could have the scenario where you really start absorbing, or whatever way. So there were different models that you could have, and I somehow built this salad smoothie.
I like that.
And
I like that.
A mixed salad concept. And the smoothies, there are some scenarios where you know, you're like, hey, the smoothie, you just need people to get to rid
blend.
Of.
Yeah.
Yeah, to blend, exactly. Yeah. And there are times where you need that mix. Okay. And I love the fruit salad. If you ask me, I would go for the fruit salad
mm-hmm.
in most occasions, because you still maintain the texture of the fruit,
exactly.
But you can be creative, build a base as you want,
exactly.
In that sense, yeah.
That's interesting. That's a really interesting take. I like that.
So you can think about it the next time you're in scenarios and you're like,
absolutely.
Do I want to make a smoothie out of this, or am I just going to be
salad.
Like, no, or in some cases you're just going to be like, no guys, I'm an orange. That's
yeah,
it.
I'm,
like,
I'm just sticking to
to that.
Wow. No, that's so interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
You see. So yeah.
Awesome.
Good. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I look forward to what the episode has and all the feedback,